At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, spending time with Mary Roach, the author. Her new book, Replaceable You, Adventures in Human Anatomy. We travel to Chengdu, China, and we meet researchers and medical personnel who are using living things, but living things that don't exist before they make them. They're called chimera. What are they? How are they used? Where are they, Mary?
Sure. Well, in Chengdu, I was visiting researchers who are working on xenotransplantation, which is genetically editing a pig, in this case, so that its heart is less reactive, so that you're knocking out a protein called the alpha-gal protein that causes a very, very vigorous rejection from humans. So they're doing that. But in the course of my visit and my conversation with these researchers, they mentioned work that a colleague was doing called chimerism. A chimera, if you're familiar with the word from mythology, it's a being that is two parts at once, two different creatures at once. And chimerism is really just in its infancy. I believe there is a rodent example that's been successfully created. But what they're talking about is you're genetically editing, let's use the example of a pig again, because pigs tend to be used, such that you're knocking out its ability to grow, a kidney. And now you introduce, when it's just a few cells old, you introduce human stem cells so that they're going to go to that open niche, the kidney, right? So now you have this pig that is literally growing a human kidney. And because it's always been part of the pig's body accepts it, but it is a human kidney. And so you could take it and implant it in a person and there wouldn't be a rejection. You wouldn't need to use immunosuppression. So fast forward many, many, many years, if this continues, this line of work, you could conceivably have pigs that are growing that have your parts waiting for you should you need them, kind of like a car in the backyard for spare parts. So that's chimerism. Apparently there's a rat that grew a mouse kidney or vice versa. It's in the book. I'm now forgetting. So it's very much in its infancy, and we'll see where that goes.
That's the more science fiction version of what there it can be done now, because you're in China and you ask a very good question. Why are you using pigs and goats and other farm animals when you can use cadavers? And what is or people who donate the organs, and what is the Chinese opinion of that?
Well, the one reason I was in China, one reason I set the, this is again, this, setting aside chimerism.
Yes.
The xenotransplantation using pig, genetically edited pigs rather than a human organ is just because there is such a shortage. In this country, we still have around 6,000 people a year who die on the waiting list. Not enough people donate organs to keep up with the demand. So the idea is if a pig organ was a temporary solution, say it bought you 8 months or a year or 2 years, you could hopefully make your way up the waiting list for a human organ. So it could be a stopgap measure. In China, where there is culturally no tradition of donating organs, which has to do with Confucianism. Anyway, it has to do with the belief.
They want to be intact when they get to where they're going.
Well, it's a belief that your body and all of its parts are a gift from your ancestors, and to take out pieces of it would be disrespectful, but also what you're saying, that you might need it in another life. So that's how it was explained to me by the researcher in Chengdu. So there's a vast need for organs in China.
Hence the pigs. Now, xenotransplantation, there's politics here as well. There's some things that are not recognized, some that work and can be recognized. Is it a moving story? Is there more and more education about this, or is there a wall that can't be moved around or gotten over?
Transplanting pig organs?
With xenotransplantation in America.
Oh, well, it's just very new. Right now we have, there are fewer than 10, I believe, kidney and heart xenotransplants. This month, the trial, eGenesis, as a pig kidney trial underway, just starting either this month or last month. So it's very new. It's not so much political as so far, most of the patients have only made it a couple of months. There's one gentleman who's, I think, had a pig kidney for 9 months. That's kind of the longest duration. So we'll have to, see how it goes with the people in the trial that just started.
Let's stay with the pigs, because they turn out to be very close to human beings' body parts. You witness in a lab the extraction of a heart from a pig, which was a shocking scene. At first, I thought, I can't read this, but then I thought about it and thought, well, Mary's there. She'll take care of me. So I went back. And what is it that they're learning from pigs' hearts that they extract?
Well, this experiment didn't have to do with xenotransplantation. This was a really promising...
A real pig. We're no longer transplanting. We're talking with pigs teaching us things or taking.
Yes, that's right. That's right. This is research being done at the University of Michigan Extracorporeal Life Support Laboratory. So extracorporeal meaning outside the body. This is where ECMO was pioneered, that device that oxygenates the body when the heart and lungs can't do it or are not doing it during surgery. So what those people were doing the day that I visited, were looking at ways to extend the shelf life of a donated, a human. One day it would be a human. And they were using pigs because this is in the research stages. But the hope is that when someone donates a heart for transplantation, that you could keep that organ for longer than the traditional, say, 4 to 6 hours on ice, or even some of the techniques that are now being used where the organ is has a blood oxygen supply. So it's you're going extending it even to 12 hours. They're hoping to extend it 24 hours, 48 hours, even weeks or months, so that now you could take a donated human heart, you could look at it with an echocardiogram, you could see how well it's functioning, and if there's a problem with it, you could even go in and fix that. So you'd be increasing the supply of hearts available for transplant. You'd have almost like a bank. You'd be storing them, and you could make use of older hearts, because hearts now, there's an age limit, and a heart will be discarded if it's past a certain age. It may be a perfectly viable heart. If you were able to take a look at how it's working and even fix it, you can imagine how many more organs would be available for transplantation.
So again, we're at the frontier of what they want to do.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, well, that's all very positive. And we should do something simple before we go to the donors list, which I find compelling.
Yes.
Let's do a simple thing. Tycho Brahe, a very famous Enlightenment figure, was also a duelist when he was younger. I didn't know this, Mary. It's a wonderful story. What happens to him?
Well, he was a little bit hot-headed, and he got into an argument. And in his time, those things were sometimes settled with a duel. And in the duel, a portion of his nose was sliced off. So Tycho Brahe had a Well, there's disagreement over whether it was brass or what the alloy was. He had some kind of a metal nose that was held in place with adhesive. And that's not something that I knew either. So noses, I wrote about noses. I found them interesting because there's been a need for noses over the centuries because nasal mutilation, not from a duel, but as a form of punishment, was popular because it served not only as a punishment, but as a deterrent, because your nose is in the middle of your face. Everybody sees what's happened.
Right. There was a siege where the men who resisted were punished by having their noses cut off, not killed, but without noses. Right.
Yeah. Yes. That's a story of in Nepal, the story goes.
Your footnotes are richer than the text in many instances. That's why I
yes,
read them.
That's a good one, that footnote. We don't need to get into it. But anyway, there was the entire town was denosed as a punishment for siding with the wrong side, basically. So there's been this demand for nasal repair. Also, the syphilis era ushered in more demand because sometimes the whole bridge of the nose would collapse. So there's been surgical procedures dating back more than 1,000 years, which is astounding. Taking a flap from the forehead or the cheek and cutting it away, but leaving it attached so that there's a blood supply, and then you flop it over onto the nose where it grows in and eventually grows its own blood supply, and then you cut the connection to the cheek or forehead, wherever you've taken it from. And the fact that this was done that long ago and that people understood you need the blood supply, I found phenomenal. There were also a number of amazing nasal prostheses, my favorite being one from 1894, an army surgeon named Frank Tetamore. He devised a system. It was a pair of glasses, and a celluloid, primitive plastic nose was suspended from the glasses. And it even had, to cover up the bottom of the prosthesis, there was a mustache hanging there off the plastic nose. So it was essentially a medical Groucho Marx glasses.
Right. I think Brahe had one of those too. He used a mustache to cover up the glue job during the day. Now, because we've dealt with noses, we also need to go to something that I want Mary to help me understand. Apparently, beauty can be solved with a Fibonacci sequence. What is that? And how does it relate to replacing a buttocks with fat?
Well, I'm glad you asked. This chapter has to do with the pursuit of perfection among plastic surgeons.
I see.
And I found there's a number of surgeons who have come up with what they feel is the ideal, whether it's the calf muscle, the lower leg, which sometimes has implants in it, or the buttocks. And the way that this is determined, in the case of the surgeon that I went to visit, he applied the Fibonacci sequence, the golden ratio. So which you sometimes heard about, the Greeks would talk about that. It was sort of, things were divided into thirds and they had a very specific ratio to one another. I was interested in, first of all, this idea of a mathematical version of perfection. And also, how was he coping with the fact that a lot of his clients were now asking for a very exaggerated buttock configuration, similar to Kim Kardashian at the time? And was he siding with Kardashian or was he siding with Fibonacci? How was he handling this? So I went down to Mexico City and spent some time with him. And that's what that chapter is about.
Yes, the whole idea struck me as, well, fantastic. So I wanted to ask about it, but not spend a lot of time with it because we're going to get to the donors next. Mary Roach, the book is Replaceable You, Adventures in Human Anatomy. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.